Get energized and excited to tell the world, hey, you can call me Catholic. Live from the Christ Cathedral Campus in Garden Grove, California, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Orange County Catholic Radio present Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normanton.
Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious. If there is any excellence, and if there is anything worthy of praise, well, it's no surprise that St. Paul encourages us to think about these things. Of course we should. And we should go one step further and talk about them, too, because that is what we do on Call Me Catholic. I am Peggy Normanton, and you have arrived at Call Me Catholic, a light and lively hour of conversation intended to affirm and explore and celebrate our Catholic identity in these modern times, giving us one more reason to wake up and say to the world each and every day, oh, yeah, you can call me Catholic. My man at the controls, Jimmy G, is sitting across from me, making sure we have a smooth takeoff and launch our voices into the airwaves.
So far, so good. Looking good.
Jimmy G is my indispensable engineer and chief fact checker. Hey, happy President's Day weekend, Jimmy G.
Well, thank you very much. Back at you.
You know, President's Day used to just be exclusively dedicated to George Washington, but now they kind of use it to embrace all the presidents in our history, so it's a good occasion to remember that we should be praying for the repose of the soul of our past presidents, for all our living presidents in gratitude for their service to our country, and for our future presidents, hoping that God is going to raise up out of the younger generation of men and women a new great president in the future for the next generation beyond us.
That is a very noble prayer indeed. Yeah.
It's a good, lot of work.
We need that prayer.
Well, being president is no easy task.
No.
So we have to remember to pray for our president all the time. Hey, Jimmy G and I are coming to you from high atop the Tower of Hope on the fabulous Christ Cathedral campus in Orange County, California. And we are the Diocese of Orange. Orange and Southern California proudly collaborating with EWTN to bring you our broadcast. So here we are in Southern California, snuggled in there between San Diego and Los Angeles counties. And now it's interesting to me that the Catholic Church across the United States of America has so many different histories of how the faith came into their region. For example, on the East Coast, there are so many parishes and churches that were formed from the Catholic immigrants who migrated here over the last turn of the century. Hmm. And they clustered together to preserve their faith and to express their faith and to grow their faith.
Right.
In the context of their ethnicity. Now, here on the West Coast, specifically California, we too have a very distinguished Catholic history that's really part of the story of our state. It starts back in the mid-18th century when Spain sent a certain Franciscan priest by the name of Father Junipero Serra to what was then called Alta California or Upper California. It was the land above Mexico. And Spain sent these Franciscans to advance Spain's settlement in this region and wanted them to establish missions, which are Catholic church communities up and down the coast, where they would teach the Native Americans not only the Catholic faith, but also help them learn agricultural skills and modern methods for accessing water and providing shelter and protecting themselves.
Okay.
So Father Serra and his brother Franciscans were very successful in their efforts and established a total of 21 missions from San Diego to Sonoma. And that history is part of every fourth grader's curriculum here in California. Do you remember studying the missions in fourth grade, Jimmy G? You went to school in California.
I certainly did. In fact, all three of my boys have done the same thing.
Yeah. And they always have as part of their study, they are usually assigned a mission, one of the 21 missions, and they have to study that mission, do a report on it. And then the darling of all projects do a little model to scale of that mission, because the architecture really tells the story of the mission. So if you can familiarize yourself with how they were built, how they were laid out, then you have a better understanding of what they actually did on the mission.
And I'm sure your boys did that too.
Yes, they did. We got through three of those. And I remember that myself doing it. I remember going on the field trip to Mission San Buenaventura. So today on Call Me Catholic, we are devoting our conversation to discovering more about the California missions, because we know there are a lot of listeners out there who haven't been exposed to this fascinating chapter of American Catholic history.
Hmm.
And we have as our guest Michelle Lawrence Adams, the executive director of what is called the Jewel of the Missions, Mission San Juan Capistrano, right here in our own Diocese of Orange. It's a landmark that we are so proud of. It's worthy of any visitor's itinerary, no matter the faith.
Hmm.
It is gorgeous and legendary in its cultural impact on the area around it. And Michelle Lawrence Adams has been instrumental in continuing to preserve this really important mission site and the buildings on it. and has greatly enriched the local community through her outreach. And then we're going to also speak with author Stephen Binns, who just published a pilgrimage guide to the California missions called St. Junipero Serra's Camino. It's a wonderful summation of the missions from an historical and spiritual perspective. So he combines that duality. And then finally, in chatting with Catholics, I talked with some fourth graders who attend Mission Basilica Catholic School in San Juan Capistrano about what they've learned from their studies on the missions this year. And they have a few things to teach us, I think, of course.
Words of wisdom from the little ones. Always.
Always. No filter. Always so enlightening and a little bit entertaining. But first up, it's our Call Me Catholic Countdown, which this week, not by accident, is my top five favorite bits of information about the California missions. It's a deep well of facts and great stories, but I'm pulling out five items that may pique your interest to learn a little bit more about them. So here we go, our Call Me Catholic Countdown of the week.
The Call Me Catholic Countdown.
Missions guy.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, my number five interesting fact about the California missions is that we had a mission that actually traded with the Russians. You think there was a little hacking going on then?
You never know.
Mission San Francisco de Solano in Sonoma, which is probably the northernmost mission of the 21, along the El Camino Real, which means the King's Road. They traded with the Russians, so they were very enterprising missions. They taught them how to work with people, how to use their natural resources to survive. Okay. Number four. Now, the missions were often poorly defended, and they were on a coastal route. US 101, which is the route that is called the El Camino Real that the missions were built along, is coastal. It's right along the Pacific Ocean. And they were not very well protected. And they were often threatened by pirates who sometimes raided the coastal settlements.
Wow.
Mission San Buenaventura at Ventura, which is close to Santa Barbara, it's a beautiful beach community there, was threatened by the French pirates in 1818. And they came in and took their valuables and herds and then as a result, that mission community moved inland several miles until the danger passed. Those pirates, they were around then. They're still around.
Wow.
They scare me.
1818 wasn't that long ago.
I know. Which seems like only yesterday. Yeah, but they're still around, those pirates. Arr. Yeah. Okay, now number three interesting fact about the missions was that Zorro, you know who Zorro is.
Sure.
And what's the name of his horse?
I don't know.
Tonto, right? Wasn't it Tonto?
No.
Or was that his companion? Was
that
Tonto?
That was Lone Ranger. Wasn't that Tonto?
Oh, was he the one that had Tonto?
I think so.
Okay, yeah, Zorro was a little more had a little more romantic appeal.
He was
a fictional character, and he was invented by Arthur Johnson McCulley. And his first story about the Black Masked Crusader, okay, you knew he always wore the black mask.
Right.
Was published in 1919 and was titled The Curse of Capistrano. And it was set at Mission San Juan Capistrano, fictionally speaking.
Interesting.
But, you know, it was great setting for fictional characters as well as real life characters like Junipero Serra. Okay, number two interesting fact. The missionaries who came to California from Spain introduced Chinese fireworks to the continent.
Wow.
Yeah. Very explosive. I love fireworks. So thank you for that, missionaries from Spain.
More facts I got to check, but I'm not doubting that.
Okay, my fact checker is taking furious notes during this list today.
Copious.
Okay, number one. Okay, here's my number one fact about the California missions for all you listeners out there in other parts of the country where you don't study the California missions. There are 21 California missions from San Diego to Sonoma, which is really more central California. It doesn't go all the way north. But Junipero Serra, St. Junipero Serra, only established 9 before he died. And then he left his brother Franciscans to continue his work up the coast, which was to establish 11 more missions. Now, Junipero Serra was 56 when he first landed on our continent and began his work there in San Diego. That was where the first mission was in 1769. And he wasn't in great health. I mean, he had asthma. He had a terrible leg infection. And this was rigorous work. It was tough work, and he hung in there for several years and started the mission train going, and he is a saint today. So Saint Junipero Serra, pray for us, and thank you for establishing such a beautiful tradition of faith in California.
Gorgeous. Amen.
And really good architecture. That mission architecture, which you see throughout California, throughout the world, really, it's indigenous to our area. Okay, so that's just a teaser to whet your appetite for the conversation ahead. We'll be talking with Michelle Lawrence Adams, the highly respected executive director of Mission San Juan Capistrano, arguably one of the most beautiful and well-preserved of the 21 missions. But before we get to that, we want to remind you that you can stay connected to the Call Me Catholic team on our Facebook page. Did you know that we have a Facebook page? Check us out and like us if you feel like it. You know we like you. That's facebook.com/Call Me Catholic. We've got pictures of all our guests. We've got podcasts, links to all kinds of interesting things. So join the team. Or you can always just send us an email with your comments or questions to callmecatholic@ewtn.com. More mission talk ahead, so stay with us. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Exploring the perils and blessings of embracing a Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Well, greetings and welcome back to Call Me Catholic. I am your host, Peggy Normandin, and we're going back to fourth grade today on Call Me Catholic. Every good fourth grader in California studies the California missions as part of their grammar school curriculum. So class is now in session because we have a most excellent teacher in the house. Michelle Lawrence Adams is executive director of Mission San Juan Capistrano, affectionately and appropriately called the Jewel of the Missions for its beauty and grandeur. And Michelle Lawrence Adams has been instrumental in preserving that beauty and the rich history of this third mission community established by St. Junipero Serra. Michelle, welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Thank you for having me here today. It's a pleasure.
Hey, so I grew up in Southern California, so I do mission speak. You know, I went through the fourth grade curriculum, and my kids did too. But Mission San Juan Capistrano, even though we didn't visit it, I grew up in Los Angeles, we went to Mission San Buenaventura. But it's legendary. So my question to you right off the bat is, was it always this distinguished grand dame of the missions, or is it because it's been so well preserved?
I would say it's the stewardship of Father St. O'Sullivan, who arrived in 1910 with tuberculosis and a short lifespan given to him, where he went on to live another 23 years. And during his pastorate, it was he who saw the visionary presence of the mission in the 20th century, not only as a Catholic place, but as a place of inspiration, and welcomed the plein air artists and those that captured it on canvas. Yeah. Doing that started to create more of an interest in places like missions as people were exposed to the artistry and the plein air movement. So really, it's his effort in the 20th century to actually expand the meaning of the mission as a destination. And that revival, the first dollars raised for preservation, investing back into the landmark, allowed it to expand its meaning and place on the world stage.
Well, it is exquisite in its landscape. I mean, I've visited a lot of missions, but this Mission San Juan Capistrano has absolutely stunning grounds that I've never seen. In fact, you use it for special events in the community all the time.
Well, the mission has had many cycles. It's had the prosperity, it's had the productivity, and then the decay and decline. And in the 1990s, the Mission Preservation Foundation, which I was able to come and work for along with the diocese, decided to really come up with a preservation strategy, which we embarked on in 2004. So I'd like to say it was always beautiful and always perfect, but it's a reflection of the community's engagement and a commitment to stewardship and understanding that the juxtaposition of the decaying arches next to the living life of the plants creates a sense of spirituality and a sense of appreciation of the past.
I remember reading that your background first was in business and then you got your master's in arts history or art management?
In business management.
Oh, business management. Okay, from the University of Redlands. Did anything prepare you for the broad scope of responsibilities and attention to details that you have with this job of being executive director of Mission San Juan Capistrano?
Well, there's two different parallel tracks. The first thing that prepares anybody is an open mind and a willingness to work hard. And luckily, I was had good examples in my life. Being a city planner, I was familiar with downtown revitalization and preservation, which as a technician was a great opportunity coming to the mission, understanding just the huge responsibility that the whole organization had for caretaking Sarah's place. It's mm-hmm. the seventh of his nine missions.
Oh, seventh. I'm sorry. I said third.
It's the one that he walked on. We ring the bells daily in his honor at 9 o'clock, seven times. So that's the first thing that prepares you. And then I think life experience prepares you as well. And having many chapters of change in my own life has opened up my appreciation for what others see in the mission. And so enable to bring that alive for them, whether it's the education phase of raising children or maybe the prospect of cancer, or terminal illness, or the sense of religion and the practice of religion in your own life. There's a lot of places that the mission intersects with people in their life phases or the sacraments. Mm-hmm. And having that life experience has also prepared me well.
Well, what year was the mission established, Mission San Juan Capistrano?
This is the only mission actually founded twice. 1775 was what Father Sarah wanted, started, and then delayed, and then restarted in 1776. So uniquely, this mission is on a parallel history with the United States
founding.
And we really bring that to life for our kids. We see over to 71,000 students, chaperones, and teachers a year on a normal year. We've exceeded that some years. And we try to explain to them that this place is as old as our country. Yeah. And a lot of kids can't understand what old is until you start explaining to them, well, it's like having three great grandmas in a row and understanding that we have a sense of duty and responsibility to continue to make it lively.
At what point, Michelle, did the mission stop being the mission that it was founded to be? And then was there a point where missions kind of fell into disrepair or were evacuated and kind of left abandoned and then were revitalized again as parishes and churches?
Missions really faced the end of their liveliness in the 1830s, and that's when they started to become secularized, sold off, reparceled out under different ownerships. This particular mission was privately owned by a family called Forster Family. For over 20 years, they lived on the mission grounds. Children were raised on the mission grounds.
And then like a little city?
I believe all missions, in a sense, are the beginning of cities. Mm-hmm. And every great city you want to live in California is pretty much a mission town, in my opinion. But the Forsters lived and stewarded it and kept the chapel going. And then the mission was returned back to control of the Catholic Church as one of Abraham Lincoln's last acts before he was assassinated. We actually have an exhibit that explains our unique relationship to Abraham Lincoln. And when it became back in the Catholic Church's sort of control, it didn't mean that it was a growing, prosperous place. It was a property, and there are other properties we manage as well in the collection. It really wasn't until an early ecumenical group in the early 1900s saw the promise of the mission as a place and started to raise funds for its preservation. And then when O'Sullivan arrived in 1910, he took the ecumenical group, the Landmarks Club, joined it himself and spearheaded a 23-year-long stewardship effort. He put a wall around the mission. He charged admission to it. He took the admission money, put it back into the grounds, created planning, established the school. And so it reintroduced it to that century. And now in this century, our job as a community, and not just myself, but a large group of volunteers, employees, we have expanded the meaning of the mission even larger than a Spanish outpost, but to include a history of the Native Americans who built the mission and expand on their contributions and make sure that we celebrate the unique living place of worship that the mission is every day.
So, Michelle, what went on in a mission? What did the Franciscans establish it to do? Because the architecture tells the story of what went on there, too.
Well, the number one goal was to bring Christianity to the West here. And so it was a place of living, and the Native American community was instrumental in that, in building the mission, in creating, in a sense, a city-like lifestyle and food.
So they would come
production
and live. There were homes for the local natives.
The Native American community would build little dwelling units called quiches. Then there would be alcoves or places such as a cocina or kitchen in the mission wings. There would be a dormitory. The mission grounds would be much bigger than what you see today as 10 acres, be hundreds of thousands of acres, tens of thousands of acres, depending on the mission
and
the land surrounding it,
because
they would have the agriculture. We have whole exhibits that talk about the food that was produced on site, the livestock, and the wares that had to be produced, the leather goods, the basket making. And then, of course, the efforts to create the work for the daily mass that would be celebrated. And the communal wine. So Mission San Juan Capistrano is recognized as one of the early wine producers in the history of winemaking in California. And most missions contribute to that history as well in California.
What is the biggest misconception, do you think, that people have, maybe in California, maybe even beyond California, about the missions? A lot of people outside of California aren't as familiar with it as we grew up with it. I certainly did. Jimmy G did. And you did. But a lot of people didn't. What are some of the misconceptions people have about
it? I think the stereotype specifically that I try to lead us through is first that missions are dusty and tired and fatigued and irrelevant and should be free, and that the state is supporting them or that the church is funding them.
Let me ask you, as a sidebar, are all of them state parks or just some of them?
Only some. About three are state parks. Others are parish-owned. Each one has its own unique identity within a broader relationship to each other as a collection. And I think that the stereotype that we face is, oh, you shouldn't have to pay to go into mission. But once you come into our mission and you take our audio tour in six different languages, you take a docent-guided tour, a staff-guided tour, you see the Sarah Chapel, which has been lovingly restored from 2005 to 2008.
It's so beautiful and gilded. I mean, absolutely, it's stunning.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And none of this just happens because we want it to happen. It happens because there's an engaged, supportive community, gives funds, dollars, time, and effort, and also stewardship and leadership. I think that the stereotype is that there's only one story to a mission, and that story is in the founding period. What I've learned is that every 50 years, there's a different story, and there's many chapters to this book. And as a leader, my job is to make sure that we continue to push the envelope in revealing those stories and making the mission be a place of inspiration, education, and preservation.
There is, as you said, every mission has a story to tell. I know La Purisima up in Lompoc is considered a haunted mission, and some of them were, as we pointed out earlier, raided by pirates. Mission San Juan Capistrano has a beautiful, legendary story associated with it, which is the return of the swallows on St. Joseph's Day. I grew up with that knowledge, and tell our listeners what is involved in that beautiful story and tradition.
Well, our Avion ambassadors have done much to put the mission on the world stage. Father O'Sullivan, he noticed that they would come back on St. Joseph's Day, which coincidentally was his birthday, and he established the mission school. And in wanting to throw himself a birthday party and celebrate the feast day of St. Joseph, he decided to start a parade and started a community celebration at the old mission. And that grew in legend and lore, and the swallows did come back. They built nests on the ruins of the Great Stone Church.
Their nests are pretty messy, too, aren't they?
They're messy little mud condominiums. And he decided that he would do this celebration, but then it was picked up by a songwriter, and Leon René composed the song When the Swallows Return to Capistrano, and it's a melancholy, forlorn song of unrequited love returning. And it's got a beautiful melody to it. And people like my great-grandma grew up in Nebraska hearing these songs and saying, when I go to California, by golly, I'm going to visit that mission.
Yeah, it was a great ambassador, lyrical ambassador
for
it.
So if the birds did anything for Mission San Juan, it's its own theme song, which introduced a generation of Americans, the World War II generation, to a great California landmark. That did us a great service, the fact that we're located near a train station and conveniently off the Ortega Highway in the California freeway system. It helped to put the mission on the map. And this mission is a great representative of the entire mission system that was conceived of by Father St. Sarah.
That's why you're called the jewel of the missions. We're talking with Michelle Lawrence Adams, who is the executive director of the magnificent Mission San Juan Capistrano, right here in Orange County, remarkably established by a saint. I mean, we have a landmark in our county that was established by a bona fide saint. Now, did it tick you off just a little bit, Michelle, that St. Junipero Serra was canonized in Philadelphia rather than here in Orange County?
Well, that day we made it especially significant at the mission because we put a jumbotron in the ruins of the Great Stone Church and did a live stream of the entire Mass. And we invited the whole community. And the church was filled, the outdoor ruins, with people that actually participated in the Mass, which was outdoors on jumbotron.
Oh, and you're being very lovely and gracious about it.
It was great for us. And for me, I wanted to stay home and be at the mission and welcome our guests. Yeah. We sent an entourage to D.C., which was really special.
Oh, you did. Nice.
But because the mission, every day when I walk the grounds, I meet people that come there for a variety of reasons, is a place of worship and holiness and inspiration to even non-Catholics. It's a place of inspiration and connection. I really wanted to be there for them. And so there was no other place I'd rather be on that day. And I know that the whole team felt the same way.
Oh, yeah. That was very, very special. In fact, Junipero Serra is the statue that represents California in the State Capitol Hall of Statues, isn't it? I think that is so awesome.
Senator Pat Bates and myself led a fight to preserve the statue.
Yes, that was being challenged for a while, wasn't it?
It was challenged by a senator in California, a state senator.
Yeah, we know.
And
who that
we
is.
Led a whole campaign on that. And because of Pat Bates, Mission Preservation Foundation, and my efforts, we were able to delay that. The senator wanted to remove the statue in time for our Pope's visit to the United States, which I thought was not really very polite of us. And Pat agreed. And so we led a public response to that. And we delayed that effort. And I think hopefully that'll just stay that way.
Well, congratulations. Thank you on behalf of all the Junipero Serra fans here in California that you kept him in the State Hall of Statues. I think that's awesome.
Well, I think the thing is that he is also the first city planner and the developer of the precursor of statehood for California. And so many people will focus on the religious history. But I think we also have to look at his contributions to California.
To the development.
We all get to enjoy today and what he's left behind for us. So
that mission architecture that is so iconic, and it is very California. You see it in other parts of the country. Was that born out of purpose? I mean, were a lot of the designs that we see, we think of as aesthetic, were they born and designed for function?
Well, always architecture is a reflection of both form and function. Mm-hmm. And the function part is looking at the materials that you have. And so we had clayish materials, which creates adobe. that was readily available. California is a desert, so you know you want things that are going to hold up.
Cool, keep cool.
Not necessarily the same kind of missions in Mexico with a different kind of stone that Father Sarah used. The tile roof is great to sun and water and rain. And those tiles, we have many of the original tiles still on the mission roofs intact from that period. So, you know, yes, it's a reflection of both the resource that's available. If you look at the Sarah Chapel and you think, boy, it's a very narrow church, you realize, well, that's because that's how long the trees were, the consistency of the width and the height of the trees at the time. So that sort of dictated how wide and how big the church would become.
Now, the bells were very significant in mission life. They told stories. They carried news. Was there a person responsible for the clanging of the bell, the ringing of the bell?
The bell ringing tradition started because it would commemorate the daily mass, tell folks what time it was, or a funeral or a baptism. And then the bells went away as in as use of their daily use for many decades. In 2013, we decided to bring back the daily bell ringing upon the opening of the mission. Every day at 9 o'clock, we ring them 7 times in honor of Saint Sarah.
Well, we have got lots more to cover with Michelle Lawrence Adams, Executive Director of the Jewel of the California Missions, Mission San Juan Capistrano, and she'll join me in talking with Stephen Binns, author of the newest best guidebook to the missions, St. Junipero Serra's Camino. Don't worry, there won't be a quiz, kids, but you don't want to miss any of this, so stay with us. I am Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Exploring the perils and blessings of embracing a Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to Call Me Catholic. I am Peggy Normandin, and we are touring the California Missions today with Michelle Lawrence Adams, Executive Director of the Mission at San Juan Capistrano, the Jewel of the Missions. And we've been hearing about why it is considered the Jewel of the Missions. Oh, listen to this. We're going to hear a little bit of Pat Boone. There we go.
Come back to Capistrano.
And we heard from Michelle Lawrence Adams that that is no fake news. That really happens. And it started out many years ago, and it was identified as a very special day on the campus of Mission San Juan Capistrano. Hey, you know, Michelle, thank you, Jimmy G, for queuing that up. That was lovely. A little Pat Boone. I haven't heard Pat Boone in a long time.
Yeah, that was a good one.
You know, so, Michelle, we have been talking about the gravitas of this mission. But I have to say, as a woman who tours museums, visits landmarks, there's a lot of other little bells and whistles that are really cool. You've got an awesome gift shop at Mission San Juan Capistrano. The best. Am I right?
Well, I'm pretty proud of it. It's like my fourth child, actually.
Yeah.
The mission store is an opportunity to raise funds for the preservation of the mission. So it directly subsidizes the religious and historic significance of the place. And there's not a thing in that store that doesn't have some special meaning. And we're very proud because it reflects 8 years of hard work and understanding what the guest wants and what their experience is.
Well, it's good shopping because, you know, I often say that religious stores could use some help. Religious gift shops at churches and cathedrals and museums, they need a little help. That is the gold standard as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you can't go in there and not spend a little bit of money. Take home something really, really precious that reminds you of your visit there.
Well, it reflects that 80% of shopping is done by women, and the project manager was a woman. So
okay.
I just have to make that little point.
There you go. Well, keep it up. Well done.
Thank you.
And one of the items that you sell that's been a very successful fundraiser for you is your cookbook. So why don't you plug your cookbook?
Well, our cookbook, Call the Table, The Bells Are Ringing, is in its sixth printing. We've raised about $300,000 gross for preservation dollars. 100% of the net has gone back into the grounds. It's an award-winning cookbook by the Tabasco Hot Sauce Company as one of the best community cookbooks in the United States.
Oh, Tabasco is made in McElhaney, Louisiana.
Our Women's Guild worked with us on that. They did a great job, and it continues to support preservation. If you don't cook, you can learn a little bit about history, or you can do both while you cook.
These cookbooks are a great souvenir to bring home from someplace. Is there any way that people can access your retail store online?
A few items are available on our website at missionsjc.com.
Okay.
Our store really reflects an experience that you have there, so we haven't really put a lot into the website. But there are a few items, and the cookbook is one of them.
So, Michelle, if there is one postcard view, one item that people want to remember, they think, I want to remember this, I want to take a picture of this, what is it at Mission San Juan?
It's the bell wall, followed by Sarah Chapel.
Yeah, the bell wall looks like an antiquity. I mean, it's ancient. It's just magnificent.
I think it's such a sense of arrival, and it's so iconically identified with the mission, especially when we put our American flag up throughout the year for the different patriotic holidays. people really appreciate it.
Hey, so Michelle Lawrence Adams, you are the executive director of Mission San Juan Capistrano, and I want to keep you on through this interview to welcome Stephen Binns, who is the author of St. Junipero Serra's Camino, A Pilgrimage's Guide to the California Missions, the latest and the best guidebook on the missions. Welcome to Call Me Catholic, Stephen.
Thank you, Peggy. Thank you for having me today.
Now, you don't live in California. What drew you to this subject matter?
I am a biblical scholar, and so I work with Catholic publishers developing Bible study books and materials, but I also give pilgrimages, first of all, to the Holy Land and other places. And so this pilgrimage route, the Great Camino of California, very much attracted me. When Pope Francis announced that he was going to canonize St. Serra
in Philadelphia.
Yes, exactly. Yes. I wanted to find out more about his life. So I read all the recent biographies, of which there are several, which I'm sure you have those in your bookstore there.
Was there anything that surprised you in your discoveries about Junipero Serra? Sometimes when we are intrigued by a saint and then we read his biography, certain things surprise us.
Well, I fell in love with him, along with the beautiful coast of California. After reading all of that, then I came out and did a personal pilgrimage to all 21 missions and then led a pilgrimage. So I'm just so fascinated by his life. You know, the common understanding of Junipero Serra, particularly as portrayed by the media in the last few years, is that he was just one of those Spanish colonizers who did such great harm to the Native Americans of California. And, you know, it's a tragic history, and it's a terrible blight on the American history what happened. But I discovered that Junipero Serra had a deep love for the Native people of California, and that's why he left a very successful, comfortable life there in Majorca and came to Mexico, to New Spain, and then eventually up into Alta California to found the first nine missions of the 21. And so it's a deep love for the Native Americans. He was their great defender, you know, and so often against the governors and the military of the Spanish colonization efforts. They were, you know, they worked together, but Serra was a very independent voice for the gospel and for the rights of the Native Americans.
So you start your pilgrimage down in San Diego, which is the first mission established, and then you work your way up through 101?
Yes, that's the way the book is laid out, from south to north, all the way up to San Francisco and beyond, up to Sonoma. So this beautiful chain of 21 missions is the wonderful new American Camino, you know, and that's what I'm trying to bring out in this book particularly, is that, you know, just as so many people through the ages have gone to the Holy Land on a pilgrim way and to Rome to visit the tombs of the saints.
And Santiago de Compostela in Spain.
Exactly, the Compostela in Spain. And now this is an American Camino, particularly with Serra as our new American saint. And we know that Pope Francis decided to canonize him as an example and inspiration for missionary discipleship, because that was really his heart. And he, you know, even though the ways of 18th century Spanish missionaries is very different from evangelization of our own day, nevertheless, the drive and the heart.
Well, imagine
of
the challenge.
Discipleship is the same.
Yeah, and imagine the challenge of coming to a brand new land, not speaking the language, very rural surroundings, and building something from nothing.
Unlike many people have come to America and left everything behind to start a new life.
Yes,
and exactly. Right.
And I think our mission, San Juan Capistrano, is the only mission in the entire state that celebrates his presence every day. We don't even have him buried there, but we ring the bells. We have an exhibit on him, and we pay tribute to the Native American contributions simultaneously. So you shouldn't have to erode his contributions to both the faith and to the state, somehow minimize that, despite the fact that acculturation and changing the community of the Native Americans did happen.
Right.
But we're not doing that today, and we're going forward with that.
We're going forward with that. So what are some of the missions? Now, I know you have to say that Mission San Juan Capistrano is a standout mission for a tourist. For someone that simply is visiting a mission, that has to be one of the highlights of the tour.
Absolutely. San Juan Capistrano was the first mission I ever went to many years ago when I was visiting the Southern California area. But I've been back several times since in the process of writing this book, and so I always bring people on pilgrimage to San Juan Capistrano. It's one of my two favorite missions.
What is the other one? Do you have to tell us?
Well, in Southern California, there's San Juan Capistrano, and in Northern California, there's Carmel, Sarah is buried, and so many of the artifacts of his life are there.
Well, what are some of the other highlights? Because how do you distinguish? You know, you're going from one mission to the next, and they begin to look a little bit of alike, although, as Michelle pointed out, they all have such a different story.
They do. You know, they're all so very unique. You know, and of course they were revised, renovated, you know, many of them, most of them in the 20th century.
What are some of the other interesting stories that you've come across in touring the missions?
Oh, gosh. You know, I'm fascinated by how much a part music was in the missions. You know, many of the Franciscan fathers knew music. They studied music back in wherever they came from in Europe, but brought it to Alta California. And so they taught musical instruments and choir and singing to the native peoples, and that was such an enriching part, not only for the liturgy of the mission churches, but also for entertainment. There's a wonderful story. Let's see, I think it's Mission San Juan Bautista, and there's a what's called a barrel organ up there, and it was given by one of the seafaring captains to one of the Franciscan fathers. And he would bring it out to the native areas and play the tunes on this barrel organ, and they were very attractive, and it became sort of like a preparation for the preaching of the gospel. And then there's a beautiful story that once the mission was established, and there were many native peoples who had become Christians and were living in the mission, but a warring tribe came down from the mountains one day, and of course everyone panicked, but one of the Franciscan fathers kept his wits about him, brought out the barrel organ, and began to play it, and then the Christian natives in the mission began to sing, and these warring people just put down their arms, sat down,
kind of hypnotized
the ground,
them,
and they asked for more. So,
I want one of them barrel organs. I could
exactly.
use one. That's
so
charming.
Music was a beautiful part of mission life.
So, Michelle and Stephen, what were some of the dangers? What were some of the real, clear, and present hazards for these Franciscan priests?
Well, I think speaking the language of the Native American community, and you know, the process of building a mission and trying to communicate, and not knowing the resources, not understanding the weather, the temperature. It's completely different than Mexico, where Sarah came up from. It's a different climate, different materials. What do you think?
I think, sure. You know, whenever I travel the mission route, traveling 101, zooming in my car along the mission, along the highway.
Convertible, hopefully.
Exactly. I think of these Franciscans and all the people of those times, you know, walking these dirt trails. You know, I mean, the trails were established by the Indians for their trade, but they were dirt trails, and they traveled by mule at best, and usually by foot. So walking from one mission to another and establishing these missions, making them with wood and stone and mud and thatch, and life was just incredibly different.
Arduous,
back then.
Yeah.
And our mission is the only one that still stands as a testament to tragedy, with the ruins of the Great Stone Church reflecting the earthquake of 1812, where 42 people were killed and perished. Actually, 40 for sure perished the day of the earthquake, which we commemorate every December 8th. The California earthquake environment, you know, how do you in La Purísima get to water? Where do you find the resources? And how do you transport that and communicate that? The ruins of the Great Stone Church at the Mission San Juan were built out of stone. How do you get the stone up in the air and communicate and not get killed or felled in the process of trying to build the mission?
These must have been very bright, strong Franciscan priests. I mean, they had to be clear-thinking, sharp men that understood how to use resources that changed.
And many times they had to find a local person to help them know where the resources were. And they had soldiers, and not always the soldiers were the best people. Right. Sometimes they were difficult and presented challenges. So I think the human spirit is very strong, and the faithful spirit is even stronger. And the missions really reflect that, you know, the rise and fall, and the ability to withstand the test of time. And our duty is to make sure that we continue in Sarah's zeal and passion to keep them standing strong.
So, Stephen Binns, you are the author of St. Junipero Serra's Camino, A Pilgrimage Guide to the Catholic Missions. Let me ask you this, and I'll put it to both of you, but specifically to you, Stephen, since you just published this book. Here in California, it is part of the standard fourth grade curriculum, whether you're in Catholic school, private school, public school. Do you think that the public school domain teaches it a little differently than the Catholic school?
You know, I think it probably does, but I don't know what their curriculum is. But I do know that the canonization of St. Onipero Serra and all the controversy that surrounded that has challenged the educational system in California, both Catholic and public, to look at that curriculum again, to revisit it, make sure that it is accurate, that tells accurately the colonial history plus the missionary efforts, as well as the rich legacy and tradition of the native peoples. And so I think by approaching it correctly, a great deal of healing can take place, you know, because of the recent events, particularly surrounding the canonization and all the media presentations that has brought. So everybody in California, because of that fourth grade curriculum, knows about St. Serra and his missions. But I think that we have an opportunity today to relook at all of that. And this book that I've written, I want people to approach these missions as pilgrims. As you know, Michelle, lots of people come to San Juan Capistrano as tourists, you know, and they want to see the mission and visit it.
From an historic standpoint, yeah.
But to pray there and to have a prayer service there, if not a mass, and to come really with a pilgrim spirit, that's what I'm trying to promote in these places, because this book not only has historical information, but lots of current information as well as a prayer service and information about the patron saint of each mission. So that's what I'm trying to...
That's an interesting question. How were the missions named?
Oh, they were named after the favorite saints of Father Serra when he was a boy and the saints that he studied.
Oh, okay.
So he named them after... Isn't that true?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, many of them were Franciscan saints. In fact, San Juan Capistrano, of course, was a 15th century Franciscan, great preacher of the missions all throughout Europe. He's buried, I believe, in Austria. But yeah, he was a famous, well-known Franciscan saint at the time.
And St. Barbara, always fascinating. Pardon me?
San Juan Capistrano, being the seventh mission, was right between Mission St. Francis and Mission St. Clair, uh-huh. And the two great Assisi. Saints.
I think one of the questions you asked about how the teachers or the schools are teaching this differently or the same, they're all governed by California curriculum standards. And as educators at the mission, we have a professional duty to make sure that we don't apply colonial consequences. In other words, take 18th century, what was happening, and apply today's standards to it.
Interesting.
And
yeah.
We really work hard to have an even playing field. And that means celebrating the contributions of the Native American community. And moving forward, we're the only mission in the state that actually has a commitment catalog of all of the things that we're doing to improve the depiction and interpretation of the Native American history. But I think, you know, one thing that Steve and I have for sure in common, in addition to the love of the missions, is maybe perhaps, so I'm looking at it as they come as tourists, but they leave as pilgrims because they find an inspiration while they're there. So there are many people that come in with low expectations and they leave changed. Mm-hmm. And I think that's our responsibility in the 21st century, is to move people's hearts and move their place and create the connection across the generations.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, on that note, I will thank Michelle Lawrence Adams, Executive Director of Mission San Juan Capistrano. And you can learn more about her mission at the website
MissionSJC.com.
Okay. And thank you, Stephen Binns, for your excellent book on the mission, St. Junipero Serra's Camino. But Stephen, thank you for your tremendous insight and for publishing a book on this. I hope that people from outside of California can get the spirit, catch the spirit, and catch that pilgrimage spirit to visit a mission sometime in the future. God bless you both, and thank you for your ministry. When we come back, Chatting with Catholics, we'll be talking to the fourth graders at the school at Mission San Juan Capistrano about what they can teach us about what they've learned about the missions this year. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Helping you navigate the daily struggles and blessings of life. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Hey, we are loving the California missions today, and I hope you're learning to love them too through the great interviews that we just had with author Steve Binns and especially with Executive Director of the Mission San Juan Capistrano, Michelle Lawrence Adams. Really enjoyed. I learned a lot, and I hope it piqued your interest as well. Now you're going to learn even more, but from the eyes of fourth graders here in California. Fourth graders at the Mission Basilica School at San Juan Capistrano invited me into their classroom to talk a little bit about their mission projects during this fourth grade year. Here's what they had to say.
Call Me Catholic. We're chatting with Catholics.
I am walking on to the Mission Basilica School right next to Mission San Juan Capistrano. It's their parish school. And I'm going to talk to some fourth graders about what they learned about the California missions this year.
I think that because my mission has two, it's the only mission that has two identical bell towers.
And what did they use the bells for?
To call everyone to work, to eat, and asleep.
And what's the name of the mission that you study? Everybody's been given an individual mission that's your project, right? So what's the name of your mission?
Mission Santa Barbara. It's the Queen of the Missions.
My mission, San Junipero Serra, was buried there. San Carlos Borromeo del Carmelo.
What do you think of St. Junipero Serra? What kind of a man do you think he was?
I think he was a good priest, and I am very fond of him.
You developed a friendship with him in studying, huh?
Yes. I think he was healthy for what they were back then, because they didn't know much about the diseases. And I think he was a very religious man.
Now, what's the name of the mission that you study?
Mission San Fernando Rey de España. I learned that there was gold found by it in one of the onion fields, clinging to an onion.
And so did they dig in and find more gold?
Yes.
Wow. Wouldn't you have liked to have been one of the farmers discovering that?
Yeah.
So what were some of the other things that they built into the mission community?
They baptized Native Americans.
And they taught them the religion, right? So they had the church and the chapel. But didn't they have a lot of other living resources there? Like sometimes cattle and crops?
Horses, sheep, goats.
Cats, dogs.
San Junipero Serra found the first 8 missions, 9 missions, and
he became a saint just last year, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why do you think they made him a saint?
Because he did a lot of great things, and he founded the first 9 missions.
If you lived on a mission, what would you like to do if you had to live on a mission? What would be the work you'd choose to do?
I would probably be a priest.
Okay, well, that's pretty bold. You're a girl. But you'd like to work in the religious aspect of it, where you would help teach the faith to people?
Yes.
Yeah, and maybe you could be the first altar girl back then.
I guess I could.
Sure you could. What was it like to live during that time, do you think? What was their life like on the mission?
It was really hard because there wasn't a lot of food until they invited the Chumash Indians to go and help out. Like, usually the men would do the hunting, mostly sometimes skinning the animals. And the woman would know how to make the bowls, the jewelry, and food.
What is unique about the building? Now, your mission is Mission St. Anthony of Padua. What is unique about your mission building that may be different from some of the other ones? Or what did they all have in common?
The thing that they had all in common was being all made of adobe bricks. They thought it was sturdy enough to hold it.
And maybe there was a lot of clay resource in the ground in that area, yeah. Tell me about what you know about. Is this your model here that you built? Wow, you are going to be an architect or a landscape designer or something, because this is a spectacular-looking mission model. What's the name of your mission?
I have Mission San Diego de Ocala.
And that's the very first mission that Junipero Serra established. Wow. So what are some of the features of your landscape or your layout here? How can you describe this to my listeners who can't see it?
Well, it's kind of like there's like the garden and Padre's quarters and the kitchen, storage rooms, the courtyard, and all of that cool stuff.
What is this? I see a bunch of sticks upright. Is that an oven?
What it is it's one of the huts that the Indians, which they lived in, which I just used sticks to glue them on. And
well, it's very convincing.
Yeah.
So it looks like it would be a very nice place to live. Would you have liked to live on a mission?
Yeah, pretty much. But I think it would probably be hard because you would, you know, it was back then and
they didn't have cell phones and stuff like
no.
that.
No. Interesting thing about my mission is that after one fire, it was rebuilt with cement to prevent more fires from happening.
They learned, huh? They learned something after the first disaster.
My mission, Mission San Antonio de Padua, was the first mission to ever have a marriage, and also the first mission to have a water-powered gristmill.
Gristmill, where they grind the wheat and everything. Oh, and so they performed the first marriage at that one, too. Oh, well, St. Anthony of Padua, he has a little touch of romance in him, doesn't he? Hey, thank you, fourth graders from Mission Basilica School in San Juan Capistrano. We all learned a lot from you. Keep up the good work. Hope you all get A's. Hey, we're excited to welcome another new station, now part of the EWTN radio family. Hello to everyone listening on FM 107.7, WVPK serving Paducah, Kentucky. Thanks to our friends and longtime affiliate, the Savior Radio Network, for launching another Catholic radio station in Kentucky. Again, welcome to all our new listeners now hearing us on FM 107.7, WVPK serving Paducah, Kentucky, the newest member of the EWTN radio family. Next week, Jimmy G and I are coming to you live from the Los Angeles Religious Education Congress. You ready for that, Jimmy G?
I got to dress up for this.
Yeah, people will be seeing you.
All right.
Clean it up, Jimmy G. He always looks good. Maybe one of his vintage jerseys he'll have on next week.
No jerseys.
Anyway, please join us again next week, same day, same time, for more good news from our good faith. Until then, I'm Peggy Normandin, but you can call me Catholic.
You've been listening to Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin, live from the Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove, California. Call Me Catholic is a co-production of EWTN Radio and Orange County Catholic Radio. Heard weekly on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.